Very, very well. I don't remember very many shows in my career. If you can imagine how many shows I've done over the years, but I remember that distinctly because I used to have an uncle that used to live in Auckland.
That's right.
He's passed away since. And I met him for the first time, and I went around Auckland and New Zealand a bit, you know, and then the show was a lot of fun. I remember taking a helicopter ride and flying around. Beautiful scenery, I remember. And I also filmed a lot of it with a Super 8 film camera, and I just transferred to a cassette and played it. And it's,
you're watching it at home?
Yeah, it was really white. I mean, I got all these like Super 8 reels, and I thought, well, I wonder if they can transfer first to a VH, what is it called?
VHS.
So I had it all transferred, and I thought, wow, that's New Zealand, you know. How young we all look.
Are you looking pretty good these days?
Well, I don't drink. I don't take drugs anymore. I'm a workaholic. I work out all the time. I'm
You want to keep on rocking for another 25 years?
Well, you know, the way this life... I mean, I got my daughter with me, Amy. She's come over with me on this tour. She's 14 now, and she was going to a school in Los Angeles. And she came home the other day and she said, "Daddy, somebody at school offered me some heroin. What is that?" I said, "You know what heroin is. Yeah. Don't talk to me like I'm a fool." I said, "Let me tell you a story." I said, "I must have left school, since I left school, I must have made 300 friends. And at least a good 220 of them are dead now because of drugs and alcohol." I said, "So that's the statistics. You want to carry on? You carry on. I mean, I'm there, but for the grace of God, go. I had a terrible problem with drugs and alcohol for a long, long time.
Yeah, mainly through the 80s and then, wasn't it?
Well, all along, even with the Sabbath days, when we discovered the cocaine and someone trying to escape.
Oh, there's construction downstairs.
So that was Iron Man beginning. when discovered cocaine and the high life and all this, we just went for it, you know, and it ended up overwhelming our creativity. We thought we could never do it without the aid of a drink or a drug, and it's not the case because I've just written some songs with the original line of a Black Sabbath, and they're better than ever.
Fantastic. And talking about working with the original members, or the other members, of course, you just did a couple of live shows.
Yeah, we did two shows on the 4th and 5th of December, which we recorded. And they're just incredible recordings. Every now and again, you do a show which you think to yourself, "God, I wish this show had been recorded." And that was one of the nights. It was just so good. And the reason why I've been writing with them, because now... The thing is to put a couple of bonus tracks on an album, and we've written two or three songs, which I've done, no doubt, but I'll be putting on the live album. I don't know when it's going to be coming out, though.
Right. Excuse me, how was it playing in your home? Is your hometown as well, the reformed?
Well, it's kind of, when you do your home, there's like shows, I don't like doing Birmingham, London, New York and Los Angeles because it's like everybody and their friends come. It's like you've got more people backstage than you have in front of the damn stage, you know. So I always try and find a little place to hide, do my show and disappear at the exit because after doing a two-hour set, I'm really not in the mood to have a full-scale conversation with someone who's been drinking beer all night and talking crap, you know. I mean, I don't drink anymore, so it's doubly the double problem for me because I don't mind anybody who drinks, but I don't understand what they're talking about anymore. I don't drink. Not that I condemn anyone who drinks. If you enjoy a drink, fine. It doesn't bother me.
Something else that came out, especially with the Osman Cometh compilation, the Attic tapes. You've got a whole lot of tapes
and
you found them.
Funnily you should say that. When I was just in the studio with Tony Iommi, I said, "Tony, when we used to rehearse, you see like you got a reel-to-reel over there."
Yep.
They're very rare machines now, by the way.
There's an old one.
We used to have like Revoxes, reel-to-reel, going all the time, and there's hours and hours of tapes somewhere of us jamming. And I said to Tony, whatever happened to the tapes?
Yeah.
And he said, "I don't know." And I said to him, "You know, somebody somewhere's got like, if we all drop down dead tomorrow, has got a whole pile of stuff on us, guys." I mean, for hours we used to be, we used to rent a house in the middle of nowhere and just jam for days, you know.
Yeah, and if you did all die, find a whole lot of
I don't know where these tapes come from, what I found. I'm a hoarder. I never throw anything out. My wife's always saying, you got to clean your room up. Look, we got this house. It's like a junkyard, your room. I know, it's the way I like to live. I mean, nothing's in any chronological order. Right. It's all just heaps of this and pictures of the Beatles and all the scraps that are up for you. I don't throw anything away. And she goes, look, it's embarrassing when people come to that. I was like, I can't show them that room. It's a junk house. So there's a tea chest, and on the top was this musty old box.
Yeah.
And I turned it over, and it got Black Sabbath. And I thought, wonder what this is. I put it on my real surreal. And I thought, what the hell is it? I couldn't. The only thing I could guess it was before, I know by the lyrical content, because there weren't no lyrics, I was just scat singing.
Yeah.
That it was before we ever made a record.
Wow.
Because of the lyrical, that's the only thing I can say. That it must have been recorded in around 60, early 69,
right.
late 68. I mean, that was when we were called Earth.
Yeah.
And it's got Earth cross Black Sabbath.
Oh, my God, and the transitional period between
yeah.
the
two.
And were there any emotions that came up when you listened to
no,
this?
No, I thought, what a load of crap I'm singing.
Your most recent release is the compilation The Oz Man Cometh.
Yeah.
Was that a hard compilation to put together? There's a
lot
of songs.
Well, it's certainly crazy, to be honest with you. I mean, my wife said, pick out what you think is a compilation. And to me, old music is like, I like to move on, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never gone into a studio and gone, okay, I've had a good run, I'm going to make a bad record, you know. So, I mean, there's some albums that I prefer more than others, and you know, every album I try and beat the last one. And I nearly went crazy with it. So I said to my wife, I said, I can't do this. I said, you do it. So mm-hmm. she had to go. She went crazy. And between myself, my wife, and the record company, they come up with a compilation. And at the end of the day, I just said, whatever, because as long as it's me on the album, I don't care what it is.
And you originally wanted to call it a different name.
Pardon?
You originally wanted to call it, I believe, Legacy or something like that.
I don't know. There was a lot of different names. To be honest with you, I was against the Oz Man Cometh mm-hmm. because it sounded a bit hokey to me, but
right.
Hey, the record company, I mean, they it's done really well, amazingly enough.
Yeah. And whose idea was the bonus CD with the old interview? And
I don't know, it's the record company again. Yeah. I mean, the thing now, you can't just make a record, they've got to have you farting in the bath on the record and all these different things on, you know, yeah. I mean, it's like then you get to Japan. Japan always wants four extra bonus tracks and some obscure thing that you've done in the basement in 1901 or something. So, yeah. I mean, they do interviews, they do all kinds of stuff on record. Because CD, in the old days, when you used to make vinyl albums, it was like 20 minutes a side. Now, CD is like 74 minutes, you know.
Everyone wants more. Talking about the past a little bit, it's always very hazy about why you decided eventually to leave Black Sabbath.
I didn't leave, they fired me.
They fired you, because I was talking you, 77 and 79 are 2 years.
I did leave. I left and I went back. And then I think looking back, I think the whole problem was drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. because we started off as a rock and roll band meddling with drugs and alcohol. And we ended up as a drug and alcoholic band messing with rock. And it was kind of like, somewhere along the line, sort of switched places.
Yeah.
And because of the frustration of not being able to come up with, because we would tour, write, record, and that was like we felt like a mouse on a wheel, and there was no... We'd fought the world, the management were riffing us off, we became lazy, we thought we'd make $1 million and that would be us sitting for the rest of our lives, but it doesn't work that way, you know.
You're stuck on the kind of the revolving circle of work.
And so what happened in the end of the day, I was blaming them, they were blaming me, and it just, I wanted to do a solo album. They said to me, if you got any solo stuff, you should volunteer to the band. No, I volunteered a few ideas to the band. They didn't like it. No, I didn't like their ideas. It's kind of like a natural thing to happen. It's just like getting divorced, you know.
The 80s, the song for me that defines you in the 80s is Bark at the Moon. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic song and video. But the 80s were very much, especially the mid-80s, very much a period of the kind of very vibrant, bright coloured metal bands. Bon Jovi.
I look back at the 80s and I cringe. Oh, God, is that me? You know, I mean, it's kind of weird because I've come from the late 60s when I went through the 70s and the 80s, now we're in the late 90s. And I look back over the expanse of my career and I think, my God, have I gone through some challenges over the years and still survived and still have demand. And it's just incredible when I really stop and think about it, I shudder, you know, to think, what could have happened if it had gone one way instead of the other way, you know?
Right. And the 90s, of course, albums or songs like No More Tears and that, they're still like, you listen to Bark at the Moon and that song almost would still fit on some of your later albums as well because it's got some great riffs on that. How do you approach the 90s now in writing and recording?
When I'm in a studio and I'm working, I don't know anything about music as far as it goes, the writing side of it. I don't know anything about what chords, keys or whatever. When someone strikes a chord which sends me shivery and I look at my arms and my hair stand up on my arms, I go, that's the one. I go by, it's like a physical and emotional feeling that I get. If it affects my emotion, I get goosebumps and I go, that's what I've been looking for all the time. And that's when I know I've got a good riff.
Right. How do you feel about the fact that yourself and Black Sabbath are held in such awe by a lot of the metal and the rock bands these days?
Well, it's kind of like, at the time of doing it, of doing something, you know, it's like, for instance, right now, if you were to write something now and it was a big hit, you don't think, well, 30 years from now, people are going to look on this as being an icon of its time. Mm. It's just an extra added bonus. When kids walk on the Ozfest last year, are going to me, I'm honoured, I'm not worthy, and all this, and I go, well, what do you mean, man? It's just, I never like to sort of, if I'm one of these guys and go, who goes, what is the formula? What makes it work? Mm-hmm. What is the thing that makes it tick? Oh, it's that. If I find out what it is, I'll fall to pieces. So I don't really want to. And another question I'm often asked is, they say, Ozzy, over the years, you've made lots and lots of albums. If you could name one album which you consider your finest piece of work, which one would it be? And I always say this, which is what keeps me going. The answer to that question is, I have not yet made it. Because if I say it was any one of my records in the past, that means anyone after is a step down. So it keeps me vibrant, it keeps me alive, it keeps me striving for something that I don't think I'll ever get.
Yeah.
Because if I say I haven't yet made my Sgt. Pepper album, it's like the album that I think is the ultimate album. I mean, I've done albums that some of the tracks that I don't think are that great, kids come to me and go, hey man, why don't you ever play that on stage? And I go, what? You like that, you know? Yeah. So it's like a typical case of you please some with one, you don't please all with one, you know?
When you got fired from Black Sabbath, I'm just staying corrected here, has there been any vocalists in the rest of Black Sabbath that you ever thought that did?
I thought Dio did a pretty good job for a while.
What about Ian Gillan?
Ian Gillan and I are very good friends. I mean, I don't have much to say about Black Sabbath since my departure because I've said a lot of things and I'd like to keep it kind of all buried now because it's like we're in 1998, we're all getting near 50 now, and I'm glad to say that we're all friends. And after all what we've been through, and ups and downs and goods and bads and whatever, it's a good feeling to be 49 and be friendly with a lot of old friends again.
Right.
I'd rather be friends because it's too time consuming to have enemies, you know.
Yeah. A history of Black Sabbath came out several years called Wheels of Confusion. Absolutely appallingly written, but very interesting. It's been 30 years. Is there going to be the Ozzy Osbourne autobiography? Is it written by yourself?
Well, I've tried to. I mean, I got a book deal, but I can never remember what I did. I mean, you know, it's like I can remember periods.
Yeah.
But in 30 years, there's been so much gone on in my life that it's never been short of an event. Every day has been, when I was drinking and getting stoned all the time, I did some insane things, you know, and people laugh about it. But I remember, for instance, a few years back, one of my wardrobe girls got married in Hawaii, and I went to the wedding. And we were driving across Honolulu, and she said to me, there was this great big cliff. It must have been 60 or 70 feet by the ocean, before the ocean. Mm-hmm. She says, you remember that there, Ozzy? I says, what are you talking about? She says, don't you remember that cliff over there? I says, no. She said, the last time we were at 6 o'clock one morning, you were drunker than a monkey, and you said, it's a good day for a swim, and you dived off the top. And I swear to you, I looked at this drop and I was like, my stomach was in my mouth. Yeah. I nearly dropped dead when I saw it.
Right. When I think of yourself, Ozzy Osbourne, I think of other musicians that have lasted from starting in bands in the 60s and going on. Iggy Pop is one that always jumps to mind. Have you ever met him?
I've never met Iggy Pop. I've heard
because he's almost the American version of yourself.
Never met Iggy Pop. I've heard so much about him. Mm. I've met David Bowie several times. He's a good friend of Iggy Pop's. But no, I've never met Iggy Pop. So.
That's very interesting. Tomorrow's show here in Auckland. I know you don't like to tell us what you're going to be
I'm
doing.
I'm not telling you a damn
you're
thing.
You're not telling me a damn thing.
You come to the show and if I give it all away now, there's going to be no surprise. But I'll tell you this. If you want us to play a long time, you better go crazy out there tomorrow. But I say crazy, I don't want anyone to get injured. I don't want anybody to get injured at all.
Okay.
Come to the show, have the wildest time in your life, but most important is arrive safely and get home safely. Mm-hmm. Don't drive drunk. If you're going to drink booze, get a designated driver. Because, at shows, it really bums me out when I get a letter saying, my son went to your show and he never come back because he got too drunk and smashed his car around a tree. That ain't cool.
No. The lineup tonight that's complimenting you, Randy Costello, has been with you for years.
Yeah, Randy's been with me for a long time. Zach's been with me for a long time.
Yeah, and
Mike Inez on bass.
He used to be in Alice in Chains.
He was with me, then he went to Alice in
Chains. Okay, and stuff like that, and he came back to you.
Yeah.
Didn't want to hang out with those guys.
They're all heroin addicts.
And John Sinclair, not the famous one. There's a famous John Sinclair.
I don't know, but the guy, my keyboard player, John Sinclair, is a very famous guy in my books. He's a very, very dear friend of mine.
Right. And tomorrow's show is actually starting off a kind of a Pacific tour for you.
Well, you see, I've been getting so many fan letters for so long. Mm. It was becoming embarrassing, you know. I'd go to Japan all the time, but I'd never go to Australia or New Zealand, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's in the same, it's only, if you're going to fly that far, it's only makes, and we came to Australia before Christmas to promote the Osman Cometh, and I said, listen, by hell or high water, if I have to swim there, I'll get there, you know, and I'm here.
That's fantastic.
And the show tomorrow night is the first show of the tour.
Yeah.
So let's kick it off on a good
Of course, because you haven't been playing in the States, you've been rehearsing and getting
it
together.
I haven't done any of the shows, I'm fresh.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming into the studio.
My pleasure, man.
And it's great. I was not around in 1973. I only got here in 1974, but it's going to be a pleasure to see you guys.
All right, take care. God bless.
Thank you very much. That's Ozzy Osbourne. Tomorrow's show sold out. It's a bummer. Local band Subtrack starting at 8 o'clock. Get there early. It's going to be a fantastic show. And what track have I chosen? I'm going to play Bark at the Moon again. I played it earlier, but I don't want to play it again. Thank you. Okay.